It was more than 40 years ago that American film audiences first saw Tim Curry dressed in black lingerie, garters, and high-heeled platform shoes in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. More than 40 years. It is a thing to make one feel old. For the uninitiated, the Rocky Horror Picture Show was a film, a terrible, terribly bad film, based on a 1973 British musical stage production created by Richard O'Brien. It was a rough parody of the campy science fiction horror B-grade movies from the middle part of the 20th century. The movie stars Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, and Barry Bostwick, plus O'Brien himself, Patricia Quinn, Nell Campbell, and Meatloaf, who later achieved some fame as an American musician. A thumbnail synopsis from Wikipedia, the source of all information after Google. The story centers on a young engaged couple whose car breaks down in the rain near a castle where they seek a telephone call for help. The castle is occupied by strangers in elaborate costumes celebrating an annual convention. They discover the head of the house is a character by the name of Frank Anfurter, who is an apparent mad scientist who is actually an alien crossdresser who creates a living muscle man in his laboratory. The couple is seduced separately by the mad scientist and eventually released by the servants who take control. Although largely critically panned on its initial release, it soon became known as a midnight movie when audiences began participating with the film at the Waverly Theater in New York City in 1976. Audience members returned to the cinemas frequently and developed a subtext, manuscript, where they would shout back to the screen. They began dressing as the characters, and they spawned similar performance groups across the United States. Still in limited release 4 decades later, it is the longest-running theatrical release in film history. It is often shown close to Halloween. Today, the film has a large international following. It was selected for preservation in the United States National Film Registry by the Library of Congress in 2005. Used props from old horror and science fiction movies were used in the production, adding to the cult status among fans. The budget for costumes for the entire film was $1,600. When it hit theaters in the US, critics hated it. Roger Ebert gave it 2.5 stars. Newsweek called it tasteless, plotless, and pointless. And it wasn't until years later that eventually the New York Times begrudgingly granted it status as a low-budget freak show cult classic cultural institution. This year, in fact this month, we have seen a remake of the original film for television, now broadcast, on Fox Network, starring Laverne Cox as Frank Anfurter, the main character originally played by Tim Curry. This cast is loaded, much like the original, with unknown B and C list actors, with the notable exception of Adam Lambert and Tim Curry. Tim Curry appears as the criminologist narrator. Like the original, critics mostly hate it. This one, though, I doubt will make it to the cult status of that first one. The time is not right. It is no longer needed. We have come too far. Time passes. We know this. Time passes, and people and institutions age and change. Some mature and become strong. Some mature and become obsolete. Some age gracefully, and some resist it every step of the way. It's been more than 40 years since the Rocky Horror Picture Show first hit the silver screen. It's been more than 30 years since I attended my first midnight screening of the movie. It hurt to write that. I was 18 years old, off at my little state university in the northern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains in Maine, in a county with two traffic lights that both started blinking at 8 p.m. There were more registered handguns than Democrats in Franklin County. It was very much where I grew up. Now, the downtown movie theater had one screen and enough seats to hold maybe 150 people. It wasn't much larger than this room. And it was Maine in late October, and it was chilly outside, hardly the sort of weather for wearing fishnets. I was attending with friends who had seen the movie before, so I was coached about how to dress, what to bring, and what I would likely be allowed to smuggle into the theater. Now, I want to say a word or two about the images that I chose today for the slideshow. I chose very carefully among many images from a movie that was released more than 40 years ago. The movie received an R rating at the time, meaning it was restricted to people over 17 years of age. In the years since then, it, and much worse, has been broadcast on network television. Yet I found myself choosing carefully the image that I would use so as not to offend. I am challenged again by notions about what we can and cannot or should and should not talk about or see in church. For a movement that brought the world such forward-thinking and reality-based curricula as About Your Sexuality and Our Whole Lives, K through adult, we might be well served to let go of some of our still institutional shame and, in the words of a wise colleague, get over ourselves. But I digress. So I don't know what I expected to experience that first night in the movie theater, but the controlled chaos inside the theater was nothing compared to the inner chaos happening in my brain. Now, raised in rural Maine, my exposure to people who were not straight, white, cisgender was truly nil. I had no idea that people could be anything other than what I saw in my hometown. Now, this bad movie, this intentionally bad movie made with used props and costumes from a thrift store, introduced to me a world in which people could be creative in the way they express themselves in all kinds of relationships, including sexual ones. There was room in the world for a person like me who didn't fit in at home. Suddenly, I had language and models to begin my personal exploration. There are those who say that life is an illusion, that reality is but a figment of the imagination. My reality and my mind, as the song goes, had been expanded. Like many young people, upon experiencing this first great revelation, I dove in headfirst. Like a kid on Halloween, I tried on all the costumes. Some I wore for just a short time, some I kept for longer. It was the 1980s and then the 1990s, so there were some profoundly regrettable choices when it came to fashion and hair color. But each change was a necessary step along the way of a young person's personal development. Now, changes in fashion and hairstyle belayed a deeper kind of change happening within. As time passed, the brilliant flash of impact that was my first experience of Rocky Horror settled into a more comfortable, even nostalgic glow. When I was a newspaper editor and the Rocky Horror Picture Show came to town, Bar Harbor, during the late 1990s, we ran a full-page story explaining why it was such a big deal, how to dress, what to bring. We printed the script so people would know what to say back to the screen. And when the big night came, I was home in bed because it was midnight, and I lacked the stamina and interest to stay up that late to see the movie with a bunch of amateurs who did not appreciate the true artistry and social import of the cinema. Because make no mistake, this movie, terrible as it was, had a profound impact on American culture and the sexual and social revolution that had begun in the 1960s. I was not the only small-town kid who found a place where my weirdness could belong. Great swaths of young people discovered this movie and were liberated. It was a part of American cultures for 10 years before I saw it, and it has endured for 3 more decades, and it played last night at midnight in St. Louis. As long as there are young people coming from small towns who need to know that there is a place for them to be themselves, where they would be welcome, the movie will continue. Even as each new generation finds itself too old to stay up that late anymore. Now, playing dress up is a touchy business. As young people developing a sense of personal style and authentic personhood, experimenting is a vital exercise. As adults, it continues to be important to learn and grow, to challenge our beliefs and assumptions, and to develop empathy for those who have different experiences than our own. This is the weekend of Halloween. This is Samhain and the Day of the Dead and All Saints Day. Cultures and religions around the world, around the northern hemisphere of the world, mark this late harvest season as the time when the veil between the realms of the living and the dead is the thinnest it ever is. It is a time to mark passages, to say goodbye, to adjust to the new reality of life without people who have been important to us. This year has seen a bumper crop of deaths that have affected us all in one way or another. Among the notables that passed across our news screens, David Bowie and Prince, who taught us new things about gender. Harper Lee, who taught us about racism. Muhammad Ali, who taught us that we prefer our black prophets once they're silenced, and Eli Weissel, and Gene Wilder, and countless others. I invite you now to think of those who have transitioned from this life into the mystery that comes after it. And into this silence, I invite you to speak their names. If you would like, speak them that we may share with one another the loss that weighs upon our hearts. I will start with the name of my birth mother, Joanne Chouinard.
My hand, body, earth.
To all those who have died in this past year, We bid you farewell. As the season turns and we continue our steady march toward winter, we bid farewell one more time to those we miss. We imagine, if we can, that we can see them in our mind's eye, that they are with us in spirit, beside us, through our memories, through the physical things that remind us of them. A favorite chair, a fishing pole, a coffee cup. Late October comes, and with it, the specter of death, as nature prepares for its long slumber until spring. Maya Angelou wrote, "Only lovers see the fall, a signal end to endings, a gruffish gesture alerting those who will not be alarmed that we begin to stop in order to begin again. Time passes. We grow old. Sometimes we grow apart, grow away from our past." The original cast of the Rocky Horror Picture Show went on to other more respectable things. Susan Sarandon won a couple Academy Awards. Tim Curry had a more challenging time shaking that image, did some of his best work as a voice actor for animated children's movies, and appeared on the small screens of our televisions. They've all aged. We've all aged. Tim Curry suffered a stroke a few years ago. It still limits his mobility and his ability to work as an actor. It was brilliant casting to give him the role of the seated, sedentary criminologist narrator in the new version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Long removed from those heady days of fishnet stockings and high camp prancing, Curry, like so many of us, is subdued now. But the edge of his humor remains as sharp as it ever was. As we prepare to leave this week, I want us to consider our own comfort zones, what we consider acceptable, what goes too far. The only way I know to expand your comfort zone is to continually step outside of it. It can be frightening. It will be uncomfortable. But like the great diversity that is our universe, humans are all different. Where one person's comfort zone is stretched, perhaps to or past a previously assumed limit, where one sees it a step too much, another person finds freedom and liberation to be themselves. I encourage you this week to embrace the discomfort of stepping beyond the limits of your comfort zone. That discomfort means you are experiencing something new and challenging, and that you will grow from the experience. Embrace the discomfort. Embrace the diversity that is our world. Lean in to touch the thing that scares you. Go and judge no more. May it be so.